In this Friday forum about Montana nonprofits, Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at MSU Director Bobby Geis introduces Richard Lyon, who moderates a discussion with Bridget Wilkinson, Executive Director of the One Valley Community Foundation, and Liz Moore, Executive Director of the Montana Nonprofit Association. It was recorded via Zoom on December 10th, 2021.
Welcome. My name is Bobby Geis, and I am the director for ALIA MSU, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Montana State University. We are entering our 18th year for Friday Forum. For many of you, you might have known it as a program of Wanderlust, and Wanderlust has transitioned as of a couple of years ago to be an Osher Institute. So once was Wanderlust, now it's Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Different name, same great programs. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to today, our final Friday Forum of the semester. But I'm going to pass it on to Richard and wish all of you a happy holiday season.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Richard Lyon, and I have the privilege of moderating this discussion. Let me begin by introducing our two panelists, who are two of the leading people in the nonprofit world in Bozeman, which all of you know is extensive. It's actually one of the reasons I moved to Bozeman 10 years ago. Bridget Wilkinson is executive director of One Valley Community Foundation, a position that she assumed in 2013 after 12 years of experience in the nonprofit and philanthropic sector. The One Valley Community Foundation is a place-based funder that has galvanized more than $6 million for 200-plus local nonprofit organizations and regional initiatives. Among her many recognized honors, she was named a 20 under 40 recipient. She was selected to be one of 10 executive directors in the United States to participate in the CF Leeds Executive Leadership Institute. And in 2018, she took the stage at TEDx Bozeman to speak about how community can be a solution to the loneliness epidemic. In 2020 and 2021, she was voted Best Community Advocate by Bozeman's Choice Awards. Recently, she was awarded Prospera Business Network's 2021 Leader of the Year. Pretty impressive. Bridget has her undergraduate degree from the University of Idaho in public relations and Spanish, and a master's in higher education from MSU. She's a graduate of Leadership Montana's class of 2019 and serves on the Mission and Culture Committee of Bozeman Health. Welcome, Bridget. Liz Moore joined the Montana Nonprofit Association as executive director in 2011. Prior to joining MNA, she worked for the Rocky Mountain Development Council, a community action agency serving South Central Montana, for 16 years. During that time, she was also a founding board member for Family Promise of Greater Helena and served on the board of Exploration Works, a museum in science and culture located in Helena. Liz currently serves as vice chair of the National Council of Nonprofits Board of Directors and chairs its Public Policy Committee. Last year, she was appointed to former Governor Steve Bullock's Coronavirus Relief Fund Task Force and Governor Gianforte's COVID-19 Task Force. In addition, she is adjunct faculty in the University of Montana's Master of Public Administration program, teaching nonprofit public policy and advocacy. Throughout her tenure at MNA, Liz has focused on increasing access to resources for nonprofit leaders in Montana, prioritizing diversity, equity, and inclusion in that sector, and building the next generation of nonprofit staff and board leaders. Liz grew up on a ranch in eastern Montana, but has lived in western Montana since 1984. She's a graduate of Carroll College in Helena, and also holds a master in nonprofit management degree from Regis University. Two very distinguished speakers. I will ask Liz to start the program.
Well, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be here. Most of you probably haven't heard of Montana Nonprofit Association. So the shortcut way to understand what we are is perhaps to compare us to the State Chamber of Commerce, but for nonprofits. We have 670 501c3, so those are charitable nonprofit members, and we have 100 affiliate members. Our founding belief is that Montana's prosperity and future and vibrancy relies on a strong business sector, strong and thriving, a healthy functioning government, and a resourced, vibrant nonprofit sector. All three of those are what we rely on as citizens. And so we spend our energy supporting nonprofits in a variety of ways. We do a lot of training for staffs and boards and leaders. We use an organizational development approach. So it's not a hit and miss training. It's more like a trajectory toward building the organization's strength. We like to save our members money. So we have some products, just like many associations do. We're looked to be curators of information. So we wade through a lot of the noise and info that is coming through online to many, many nonprofit leaders. And we kind of highlight those things we think that they need to pay attention to. And then we're advocates, both nationally and at the state level, and sometimes at the local level. So with our congressional folks and with our legislators. So everything we do is aimed at nonprofit leaders having the resources they need so that nonprofits can fulfill their roles in communities. And Bridget.
Thanks, Liz. This is so fun to get to present with Liz because I'm a beneficiary organization of the Montana Nonprofit Association. So it's a privilege to get to present with you today, Liz, and great to be here. So with the One Valley Community Foundation, we really have a deeply held belief in the power for all people in our community to make a difference. And so we really celebrate what makes all of the communities throughout Gallatin County unique. And we work every day with generous donors and remarkable organizations to chart a course for a healthy and vibrant future throughout Gallatin County. And so our mission is really to connect people who want to make a difference with causes that matter most to them. And we strive to strengthen nonprofit organizations whose mission-driven work has never been more important than it is today. And we will talk more about that. So together, we seek to partner with a growing number of donors to establish funds on behalf of charitable causes and organizations that they value most. So today, the One Valley Community Foundation invests and manages 47 distinct funds on behalf of 39 generous philanthropists, with the total assets having grown to $46 million. And in 2020 alone, those funds helped to provide transformative and essential support to 179 nonprofit organizations. So looking to the future, we seek to deepen our relationships with existing fund holders of the Community Foundation and grow the numbers of donors that we get to serve to enhance the impact that we have on causes that they care about most. Secondly, we seek to strengthen the nonprofit sector by providing exceptional training and leadership development programs that help essential organizations better deliver on their inspiring missions. So often we're doing coordinating with Montana Nonprofit Association to hopefully add complementary programming to the great programming they're already providing statewide. Next, we multiply the impact of grassroots generosity for the benefit of a growing number of local organizations. So each year, the One Valley Community Foundation's Give Big Gallatin Valley inspires thousands of donors to make contributions large and small to causes that inspire them. So our Giving Day happens every May, and we really encourage you to check out givebiggv.org to learn a little bit more about that. And then lastly, the Community Foundation addresses our community's most pressing challenges by convening critical conversations and engaging diverse stakeholders in innovative ways. So together, we're working to bring real and sustainable solutions to those challenges. The One Valley Community Foundation's nonpartisan leadership is a role in proven initiatives like A Seat at the Table allows a wide range of perspectives and different constituencies to help build understanding and inform what we believe to be long-term strategies that ultimately support the sustainability of this place that we call home. So today, our focus is on thoughtfully addressing the challenges of accessible housing that we know is a rapid challenge, becoming more and more so urgent within Gallatin County. And we're going to hear more about that today. So it's a little bit about the Community Foundation. Our service area is all of Gallatin County, and it's absolutely a privilege to get to serve organizations located here. So today we hope that Liz can really give you a high-level picture of the statewide nonprofit sector, the role of nonprofits, and then I'll get the privilege of talking a little bit about what the trends that we're seeing locally with nonprofits look like. So hopefully it'll be a really neat, balanced conversation of big picture and how that's affecting our local organizations. So I'll pass back to Liz.
You already know that Bridget is a rock star. We have relationships all across the state, and she is really a standout leader. And this is fun to do this today. So I'm going to talk about what is the nonprofit sector and give you maybe some surprising numbers. These numbers come from a report that's on our website. It speaks to kind of the economic impact of the nonprofit sector. We sometimes think we don't necessarily think of nonprofits as an economic force, but in fact, we are 11% of the wage base in Montana, over 56,000 employees. Even when we take hospitals out, we have 30,000 employees, which for our state, that's a big sector. So I'll talk about who that is. Montana Nonprofit Association works really only with 501c3 nonprofits. So those are the charities we're familiar with. That means we're not really working with service clubs or homeowners associations or electric co-ops, those kinds of nonprofits. Just to give you a sense of the numbers, there are in Montana, believe it or not, about 11,000 total nonprofits of all stripes. And of those, about 8,000 are 501c3s. If we make Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation only one instead of 800, there are about 72 or 300 501c3s. Of those, about a third are employers. So maybe 2,200 have employees. So those 56,000 people are employed in communities across the state by 2,200 employers. Nonprofit is a tax status. So nonprofits have to, in order to stay viable, if they are more than just a holding place for insurance, so a lot of 4-H foundations and Little League groups, for example, just have a nonprofit corporation for protection. But if it's a nonprofit that has revenue or employees, there's a tax-exempt status. And that represents the value we have both at a national level and at a local level on what nonprofits bring. There's a social compact. In exchange for not paying taxes, we funnel resources directly into the community through services and programs. There's a nonprofit in every county in the state, at least one, as you can imagine, with 7,200 nonprofits. And we tend to think of two different kinds of nonprofits. One is the safety net. So those are food pantries, youth services, mental health, behavioral health, health services. And then there are nonprofits that are kind of the Montana we love. The art museums and symphonies, the trail groups, all the forever groups like Pheasants Forever or the Unlimiteds, you know, Ducks Unlimited, all of those. Those are more about how we want life to be for ourselves and for our neighbors. And sometimes we're asked, are there too many nonprofits? And so in many states, there are like two or three large population centers. So here we have a state that is huge, fourth largest state geographically, but has almost the least population. And so we have seven population centers. And then we have these hub communities that are, if you were anywhere else, they would be in another state. So if you're in Billings and you're headed to Sydney, a couple hundred miles away plus, that would be in another state if you were somewhere else. So Sydney would be like a hub community. It's big enough to need its own infrastructure, but not large enough to have everything. So that's part of why Montana has so many nonprofits, almost the most per capita. Alaska's kind of in the same boat. So we also have this appreciation for small government. So we look to nonprofits to stand in that gap and provide quality of life and services where business and government either can't or won't. So when we're asked if there are too many, we kind of say, well, it's the will of the people. If people want to start a nonprofit and if there's community support for it, then it will either stay afloat or it won't. And some of that depends on the strength of the organization and the leadership, just like any business. It really is kind of the ultimate expression of the will of the people, like an expression of democracy. That's why we're sometimes called civil society. So with that many nonprofits, it's kind of stunning to realize that 42% have budgets of less than $500. And Bridget will speak to how this plays out in Gallatin County. And over 50% of all nonprofits have budgets of less than $100,000. And there are very few that have budgets of like 5% or 6% have budgets of over $1 million. So most nonprofits are fairly small. And the largest of those are like the hospitals, some of the big foundations, even some of the foundations associated like with MSU and UM are fairly large, and they help with higher ed and scholarships. Disability services is another area, you know, and mental health services. They partner with government to provide those services. So they tend to have fairly large budgets as well, but not like in the realm of the hospitals. And then the smaller nonprofits are often like the food banks, humane societies, museums, libraries, after school programs, things like that, where you may have a staff of 7 to 20. And then we get into kind of like Montana Legal Services or Crittenden Home or Intermountain, where the staffs are much larger. Then we have the all-volunteer organizations. It's that other two-thirds. And very often it is like 4-H and Little League. There's one type of organization we really don't know the budget numbers for because they do not have to file an annual tax return. And that is houses of worship or religious organizations. Every other nonprofit has to file an annual tax return. And that's called a 990. So one of the things for you to know is that you can find out about any nonprofit, which we encourage, especially during the season of giving, by going to GuideStar. It's an informational partnership the IRS puts the 990s into. The partnership is with Candid, and you can look up any organization that is any 501c, I believe, but certainly every 501c3, and you will find information about their budget, about how much they spend on program versus administration. You can find out about what their CEO compensation is. So that comes up during the legislature at times. So it's good for you to know, you know, if somebody runs a $1 million organization, they have a compensation that reflects that. If somebody runs a hospital, compensation reflects that, especially in Montana, where it's hard to draw talent sometimes. So I will talk in a little bit about kind of some of the issues nonprofits are facing. We really pay attention to connecting folks. One of the reasons we're so interested in rural Montana is because we know that where people are connected more, they have access to more just because of information. And so outside of the population centers, very often those nonprofit leaders are accessing less than they could. And so we are focused on those groups. Within the larger communities in the state, very often it is the community foundation that is doing that capacity building and helping connect others. So we rely on those networks. And to the extent that we are able, we partner with them. Our goal is for a strong nonprofit community. And we don't really care how the work gets done. It's better if it's shared. And so we really appreciate being able to work with Bridget and her colleagues across the state. Foundation funding in Montana is fairly low, not out of lack of generosity. It's just that we have a really limited number of large foundations. The last time I could find a statistic, we were ranked 47th in foundation giving. And so again, you have this huge state, a lot of nonprofits and limited foundation giving, which makes individual philanthropy more important. We have generous corporations. Often they will talk to business owners who feel like they're being asked a lot around giving, and we just encourage them to focus on what matters to your mission and how you want to be engaged in the community as a business. And then part of funding, of course, is those partnerships with government, where they rely on us to deliver services in communities and they fund those services.
So when we think about what the sector looks like within Gallatin County, so we have leveraged Montana Nonprofit Association's Economic Impact Report, where you can pull these numbers by county. And so in 2019, there were 799 registered nonprofit organizations. And many of these were volunteer-led entities that Liz just described. Of the 799 organizations registered within Gallatin County, 32% of those total nonprofits, or about 258 organizations, are employers with staff. So these 258 nonprofits employ 4,492 employees and paid $181.6 million in wages, with the average wage being $40,431. So in 2019, $944 million in income was generated by nonprofits and $928 million in 2018. So that creates a combined two-year total of $1.87 billion of income generated by nonprofits in Gallatin County, which is pretty extraordinary. And so really building off of what Liz said in terms of the roles that nonprofits play in Gallatin County, so much about what we love here is attributed to our nonprofit sector. They are so much of the social fabric of this community. So when you think about open space to conservation, to arts offerings, to our ski hills, to our hospitals, our region is really supported by this nonprofit infrastructure and creating this place that you love. We also serve as an economic multiplier. So by investing in nonprofits, it enables them to hire more people and to deliver services on which other people depend on for their own, especially right now, relief and recovery. Additionally, support for organizations will allow them to provide additional services such as childcare and job training and stimulate economic activities such as people spending money at restaurants and bars and retail stores in all of the downtowns that we love across Gallatin County. As Liz mentioned, they are doing a lot of the work that otherwise would need to be done by another entity, such as a government entity, or be paid for by your taxes. So our nonprofits are really playing a very critical role in creating the place that you love. We had the privilege as a community foundation to reach out to our executive directors throughout Gallatin County, and we asked them three really simple questions just as of this week. They very graciously responded with a sampling for us of some data to be able to share with you. So I think this data is helping to highlight some of the trends that we are seeing locally and also what Liz will echo a little bit later, some nationally. But I also think it gives voice to our nonprofit leaders who are extraordinary professionals on the ground, seeing some significant changes and opportunities and challenges throughout Gallatin County. So the first question that we asked them was, do you believe that your organization will raise more, less, or the same amount of funding this year as last year? And 57% of organizations said they're actually planning and anticipating on raising more funding this year, which was pretty exciting. 14% said less funding, and about 21% said about the same amount of funding as last year. And the remainder was simply unsure. Then when we asked, how has the growth of Gallatin County affected your organization? We pulled out some trends here. So I'm going to highlight the trend, and then I'm actually going to read to you some language that's anonymous from our nonprofit leaders so that you can actually hear their voice about the trends that they're seeing. So once again, the question was, how has the growth in Gallatin County affected your organization? So it appears that with more growth, there are more fundraising opportunities and a growing donor base, which is exciting. So one of the trends that has been pulled out is that the growth seems to have increased the challenges the organizations are trying to address. So while it's increasing the donor base, it's also increasing the challenges that organizations are trying to solve. So two nonprofits articulated, it has increased our donor base while exacerbating social equity issues in commas, housing affordability that we aim to mitigate through grant cycles. The second nonprofit said, an increase in demand for offered services, especially childcare, but a lack of available or willing employees to help meet the demand. Second trend that was pulled out was housing and affordability are a top challenge, not only for the clients that our organizations are serving, but also for the staff and the organization themselves. So one organization said, our staff and AmeriCorps members are really struggling with housing. One staff had to move to Whitehall to find something affordable. Across the state, we learned that nearly 40% of our crew leaders are living out of their cars and camping. This is affecting their physical and mental resilience, and we had lower retention this year. The next trend that's being pulled out is that it's harder to recruit and hire. So one nonprofit said staffing is front of mind for many nonprofits. In order to attract and retain employees at every level of our organization, we need to pay more. And getting our donor base on board with the resulting increase in overhead is a heavy lift. Nobody wants to fund overhead, and it's all overhead in one way or another. The next nonprofit said, it's impossible to find staff, let alone qualified staff. Even if you find people willing to work, there's nowhere for them to live. Even if they find a place to live, they can't afford it on the salary that we can afford to pay them, which is already way higher than average for the field. The next trend is that nonprofits are being priced out of their office space. One nonprofit said, we let go of our office space in December 2020 since we didn't have programming as a result of the pandemic. We will not be able to find an affordable office space now that we're ramping back up. I'm afraid that even when we are back in full semesters, that we won't be able to afford office space in Bozeman. As well, due to the significant increase in cost of living and in particular housing prices, we cannot provide adequate salaries for our employees to live in the Valley. We will, in the end, have more remote employees. So then we asked organizations about the people that they're serving. So if an organization was serving individuals or families throughout Gallatin County, we simply asked them, how are they doing? What are you seeing? What are trends that you're seeing of people that you're serving? So the first trend that was pretty overwhelming is that mental health and isolation and loneliness is top of mind for younger and older clients that nonprofits are serving. One nonprofit said, young people are struggling. We see a significant increase in mental and emotional health issues among our local and national participants, increased anxiety, and reduced coping skills. The next nonprofit said, our organization serves over 65 community. Our clients have been impacted by the pandemic exponentially. The social isolation has compounded the mental and physical well-being of our clients. Our clients are falling into dementia and Alzheimer's at a much faster pace, and the mental health of individuals who are lonely has been more apparent. We also have more seniors in need of a friend than there are volunteers to befriend them. And lastly, our participants are struggling. The impacts of COVID and not being able to fully be in person for programs has caused increased isolation and mental health concerns for our participants, especially since a cancer diagnosis can be isolating without a global pandemic. The next trend that we're seeing is economic stressors are extreme right now. One nonprofit said, our program participants have requested nearly twice the amount of direct financial aid than they did the previous year. Compounding the challenges is a lack of childcare, which then prevents parents from being able to work. The next nonprofit says, farming and ranching families are on the ropes financially. The next trend is that people are COVID weary. One nonprofit said, COVID has wearied everyone. We find that alongside the services we provide, we also have the opportunity to bring encouragement and hope, knowing our community will come out on the other side closer than ever. Needing each other and the sense of dependence coming out of the pandemic may be the rose amongst the thorns that prepares us for further challenges ahead. I thought that was really beautiful. And lastly, the housing crisis and affordability are compounding challenges for many families and individuals throughout Gallatin County, which doesn't come as a big surprise. So the first nonprofit said there are over 200 folks on the wait list for rentals in Big Sky, many living in their cars as there are no other options for them. The second nonprofit said, the cases we are seeing are so much more severe in nature. I think the housing instability and high cost of living has further disenfranchised vulnerable families and resulted in a spike of serious abuse and neglect of children. So those are some trends that we're hearing from our nonprofits about what their fundraising looks like, how their organization is doing, and how the clients that they're serving are doing. I think it's important to note that this is only a sampling of the perspectives that were shared with us. We wish we could share all of them, but I will say they are deeply powerful and really moving and honest, which is important. So we hear these challenges and feel a sense of, well, what do we do? What do I do? How do I help support this sector that is clearly investing so much in strengthening our social fabric? And I always say that we get an opportunity no matter where we're from. For example, in Gallatin County, we know a lot of newer community members are moving here. And my whole theory is, I don't care where you're from. I care who you are as a community member when you show up to that community. And so I think we really vote with our dollars and our time for the community and the type of community that we want to live in and the type of legacy that we want to leave. And so especially at year end, as we're having this conversation and getting the privilege to speak with you today, I would really be remiss to not share that I would encourage you to think about how you want to leverage your four T's moving into next year and at year end. And so for the Community Foundation, we really view anyone being a philanthropist who donates of their four T's, which is their time. So volunteering your time and energy to a cause you care about, your treasure. So your financial resources that you have access to, whether it's corporate matching or your own financial giving. Talents. So maybe you have a really extraordinary skill. Liz is an amazing photographer. Great example. How can you lend your skill to support a cause that you care about? And lastly, the fourth T is ties or connections. So who are people that you know that could be a really great resource for a cause that you care about? Maybe your bookkeeper or your accountant is looking to give back to the community and you know just the cause for them to sit on the board of. So that's where leveraging your social networks to support a cause you care about is really important. So in particular, as we're thinking about our four T's, the top of mind at year end is always around financial support for organizations. And so I want to share just a couple hot tips that people usually ask me of, you know, I'm thinking about giving. Do you have any recommendations? So as a community foundation, I would just encourage you to view us as your partner in giving. Often I explain to my mom that my job is kind of like being a philanthropic matchmaker. So I get to listen to what the needs are in the community and then connect donors with really tangible needs in the community through charitable giving tools. So you can kind of think of a community foundation as like a community charitable savings bank where we help set up funds on behalf of the community, but also help community members and businesses think about how to have a greater impact with their dollars. So I'll give you a couple tips that I will freely share. The first is if you're considering giving to an organization, Liz just mentioned a great resource, which is GuideStar. So GuideStar is a great website to just be able to view financials, that 990 form, and kind of look at some of the overall health of that organization. Once you've done that, if you're interested in supporting an organization, I'd recommend calling them and asking the best question that you can ask, which is, what do you need right now? And then pause. And listen, I can guarantee you that it doesn't happen often. And when it does, it's extraordinarily powerful because they know. They know what they need and they know how to further the mission and they will gladly share what they know with you. So I would encourage you to be open-minded to say, what do you need? Additionally, the holy grail of funding and support for an organization is unrestricted multi-year funding. So if you are really wanting to make a transformational impact on an organization, let go and trust the organization. If you're supporting them and going to give them to them anyways, you should be trusting them and trusting that they know how to invest your dollars. So reaching out to them to say, I believe in you and I want you to be able to plan ahead and to budget ahead and to think about your staffing and your programming. So I'm going to commit to you for 3 years to give X number of dollars every year. That is extraordinary. So I would consider that if you're really thinking about some strategic philanthropy. Additionally, I would encourage you to think about investing in people. The sector is full of extraordinary professionals that are really, really good at what they do. And often it takes the professionals to get the work done. So while it's really fun to fund new shiny programs or new initiatives, it's really the people that are getting that work done. So consider investing in staffing, investing in the infrastructure of an organization who are executing the programs that you love. I would also encourage you to pay attention to those year-end appeals that are coming to your doorstep. If you've been engaged with nonprofits in general, you've probably received a letter at year-end that says, will you consider supporting us? Please read them. Take it seriously. Call the nonprofit. Ask what they need. Lastly, if all that overwhelms you, your community foundation is here to support you. We are getting the privilege right now of doing a lot of grantee research on behalf of donors, connecting those donors with needs, doing our due diligence and helping to facilitate tax benefits as well. So one thing Liz can speak to as well is the Montana Endowment Tax Credit, which is an extraordinary tool for Montanans to be able to receive a tax credit, not a deduction for some charitable giving throughout the year. So if you're interested in learning more about that, your local community foundation is well positioned to help support you in that tax credit or setting up a donor advised fund where you can invest funds today and then do your grant making later. So those are a couple of my hot tips for giving. And really, you know, as we're talking about the challenges that we're seeing on the ground, helping to invest in those organizations that are doing really powerful work right now is an important opportunity. So
that brings to mind one of the things we're concerned about statewide, and that is the well-being of nonprofit leaders. We're doing a lot of work, which we should be doing. That's our role, and it's a joy, to be honest. And at the same time, we're continuing to have the uncertainty of whether we're going to be able to do things in person or need to continue remotely. Every decision every day, just like we're all facing, do I still need to use hand sanitizer? Do I still need to use a mask? Should we go into the office? Should we not go into the office? If I go into the office, how will that be? Should I meet someone for coffee? Shouldn't I? And those are little things, but cumulatively, our decision-making muscle is tired. And so that decision fatigue is a real thing, and just leadership fatigue. As those of you who have nonprofit folks in your family who are working in nonprofits or you're on a board, this is a soft thing. And I'll talk about some things that aren't quite as soft, but encouraging their well-being, it's no longer a luxury. We used to say in the nonprofit sector, remember the question pre-COVID was, so how are you? And everybody would say, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. And, you know, and there was a little bit of a badge of pride with that. And now it's really incumbent on all of us to slow that down, especially in a digital world where we don't have a break from information. Slow it down and take that minute and breathe and then come back. So in that vein, as far as the spirit of giving, I want to encourage you, if you are on a nonprofit board or you volunteer with a nonprofit, this would be a good year to give an actual small gift to someone at a nonprofit. That could be a coffee card. It could be a book, something that says, I'm thinking of you and I see what you're doing. Again, that is not going to be a game changer for the nonprofit ecosystem, but it might be a game changer for that nonprofit leader. So giving of your kindness and your spirit is helpful because the soul of the nonprofit sector is it's noble work and folks are tired. There was a question in chat about incentivizing nonprofits to work more out of rural Montana. So that brings up one issue I want to talk about, which is the funding that's available right now for nonprofits with the CARES Act money, which was last year's money. Nonprofits were able to apply for grants and the PPP loans, many of you are familiar with. And that kept us in business, literally. This year, we don't have that kind of funding. And the ARPA money, which is the wave that came in this year, much of that went to cities, counties, and then the legislature decided what to do with the remainder. And so it's a little harder for nonprofits to find access to it. There are some workforce development grants, which might help staff in rural Montana. So there's a $10 million pot or something like that. And nonprofits qualify, they're eligible. So we'll be looking at that. And that can help in rural Montana. So other than that, no, there aren't specific incentives. And that's one of the troubling things about rural Montana is the needs are there, but it takes a lot of capital to staff a position in that part of the state. With remote work, it is more of a possibility. And some of the rural communities have more housing available. Helena is not unlike Bozeman in terms of housing. I don't think we've seen that level of growth, but we've seen significant growth in housing costs and the supply chain was interrupted. So we have kind of the same situation. Student loan debt also contributes to the staffing issues. So one more thing about that federal money. Counties are making decisions about that funding. And so we're really encouraging nonprofits to weigh in on the decision making. It's not a matter of getting the money. It's a matter of together envisioning a community and how you can leverage the funding that's available right now to strengthen the community for later. So we hope that nonprofits are part of that conversation with their county and city commissions. Staffing, you know, once you have one employee, you really are like a business. You just put the profit back into the mission rather than taking the profit. And so staffing is a huge issue, as Bridget said, and housing is contributing to that and also student loan debt. And then as people come into Montana and work, live in Montana, have the means to afford the housing, but they're working remotely. Montana's employment rate is pre-pandemic. So we're not suffering from a huge group of people unemployed, but we have jobs that are unstaffed nonetheless. And then as wages grow, and wages are growing in Montana, that's part of the economic plan. And it's a good thing. But as they grow, nonprofits are often left behind. And especially those that rely on state contracts, or state contracts rely on them to get the work done. So mental health and disabilities are two great examples. If you work in a group home, you are literally saving lives, and you're making less money than you can make at McDonald's or Walmart. And so it's a tough job. It's odd hours. You have the same childcare issues. You don't get to stay home and work from your office in your jammies. You have to be there. So it's tough. And yet you're competing for wages in a state where wages are really growing. So that's a concern for us. And then in terms of public policy, we work quite a bit on that. And it's part of our role to look after the ecosystem for nonprofits. So one of the top priorities, I'm just going to cover a couple priorities there. One of them is to protect nonpartisanship of nonprofits. So there are sometimes efforts for nonprofits to be able to support candidates. We can support issues all day long, but we cannot support candidates. And so we spend time and energy actually protecting that, because we believe it should be a neutral place that's just about the mission, not about candidacy. And then protecting the voice of nonprofits. There are some who think that nonprofits can't lobby. In fact, we can't lobby to a substantial degree, but there's a little math formula the IRS has come up with and said, if you lobby under this amount and your budget is this much, it's okay. It's a right and a responsibility of association. It's part of the First Amendment. And so we spend time and energy making sure nonprofits know they can do that, training them on how to do it and follow the rules, and advocating that that not be curtailed in any way, just like other civic engagement activity. We also work to protect the tax-exempt status of nonprofits. And in particular in Montana, you know, almost every session, there will be some kind of a run at the property tax exemption. And we understand that. Counties are seeking money and municipalities are seeking money. At the same time, what nonprofits bring to the community far exceeds that tax-exempt funding that they would have put into the coffers through not being tax-exempt. So we ask nonprofits to tell that story, and we tell that story to legislators. And I think you, as board members and as friends of nonprofits, it's kind of like, this is a treasure. And so let's not do anything. Let's not make any political or policy decisions that makes it harder for nonprofits to do their work. The call would be to invest in and protect and preserve the nonprofit sector. Recognize that nonprofits need to fundraise. It's part of the business model. And when they do, they're asking for funding to provide the safety net and the Montana we love. That's what they're doing. And then that opportunity right now to re-envision the community that you want in partnership with nonprofits, and to support nonprofit leaders who are mission-driven and passionate and yet tired.
Richard, I think we'd love to open it up.
We've had a request to repeat the four T's.
So the first T is time, so your volunteer time. The second T is treasure, so your financial resources or the financial resources you have access to. The third is your talents, so skills that you might be able to bring to an organization. And the fourth T is ties or connections. So how can you leverage your social or professional network to support a cause you care about? So just to recap, those four T's are time, talents, treasures, and ties.
Do you see competition among nonprofits as a problem? And if so, how do you address it?
It is a problem, but it comes from a scarcity mentality. So to the degree that a network exists in a community, such as Bozeman and the Executive Roundtable and the Nonprofit Cafe, those opportunities for leaders to come together where they know each other and build relationships, that reduces duplication, replication, and competition. And so that's one piece of the answer. The other is sometimes people are scared. They're scared to be generous of spirit because they think, if I share what I know, other people will get the resources I should have gotten. In fact, generosity never fails. again, when we're in a community where people are sharing resources, sharing information, they tend to get more all the way around. And we see some of that in smaller communities. There are communities we go to where people say either we're isolated and independent and don't work together, or we feel competitive because we're scared we won't have money, or we are working together and it works. So that's one of the reasons we really encourage connectionality, a nonprofit community locally.
What kind of training should a college student or graduate student take if he or she wishes to go into the nonprofit field?
When you hire one staff person, you become basically kind of a small business, right? So I would say business courses are really important. Understanding financials, how to read financials, learning about best practices in hiring and retaining staff. I mean, really, so many of the principles that are applied to for-profit are applied to running a good and healthy nonprofit as well. There's definitely differences between the two entities, but I would say if I could do my collegiate experience over again, I would probably be adding some business classes early on. I would maybe start there. Liz, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, it's a viable profession. So I think sometimes there's a conception on the part of students that you have to have a master's to work in nonprofit work. That is not true. So it's a viable profession, and really any degree works, especially now nonprofits build business plans. We need a financial acumen and all of that. So that's probably the biggest thing I would say. MSU has a program called Bobcats in the Boardroom, where students go in and are board members for a year. And then UM has the Master's of Public Administration that has a nonprofit segment of it as well. Yes, on the bookkeeping right now, there is such a need to have small nonprofits to have back office services in the area of bookkeeping. So we're looking at how we can help meet that need, because every nonprofit's building it for themselves. And if you only have three or four staff, you need those services, but you don't need to build it. I can't produce a list offhand of nonprofits that need staff. I will tell you the ones that are struggling the most are the disability services providers. The Montana Association of Disability Services, it's kind of regionalized, and some of them have 30, 40, 50 openings. And so that gives you a start. But really, the best place to look for who's looking for staff is the nonprofit job board on the M&A website. In past years, we felt like if we had 40 or 50 jobs listed, that was great. Right now, it's more like 80 to 100 jobs listed.
Yeah. And additionally, the Community Foundation has a Friday email that goes out called the Nonprofit Buzz. And we also list local job listings as well, in addition to the M&A job board. So both of those can be resources to see where there could be vacancies.
Can you pinpoint nonprofits or a category of nonprofits that are in particular need of volunteer time, one of the T's? Where an individual who maybe can't make a financial contribution can nevertheless contribute with the volunteer service.
I will say that we see it across the board, that if an organization has the ability to support volunteer service, that they will happily articulate that to you. But I would say it's probably across sectors. I would say there might be a greater need as it relates to health and human services at times, but I would say arts organizations, conservation organizations can all benefit from your time and investment of time. And once again, sometimes calling them and saying, if you had a volunteer role at your organization, is there anything you really need help with? And just simply asking them that. I used to work for Family Promise of Gallatin Valley in Gallatin County. And when people would call to say that, I was like, yes, I need this specific thing. I would love your help with it today. So sometimes just calling and asking, but I would say I'm seeing it sector-wide. But Liz, what do you think?
Yes. And a couple of groups that were largely left out of some areas of funding last year and even this year are the land trusts and the arts organizations. They had a harder time getting funding because so much was going to human services. And so arts and culture. And at the same time, in the land trust world, the trails were being used, the parks were being used because people wanted to be outdoors. And so there was a huge toll. And those all have to be taken care of and nurtured and maintained. So I think that's an area for volunteerism. Anything related to children, it's been hard. Tutoring because kids got behind, and the kids that weren't able to have parents staying at home got further behind than other kids. And so programs that help kids, and then programs that are protective towards kids like CASA, those programs need volunteers. And then the domestic violence facilities. We've seen several leaders in domestic violence leave their work. I mean, they had to keep going. And under such duress, it was unreal. And here they are in congregational settings during COVID, trying to find all the materials and trying to keep folks safe. Obviously, food continues to be an ongoing thing. If you can't volunteer time, volunteering food. And I echo what Bridget says, especially in the case of food, to call and say, what do you really need? We all have the things we donate, but there's stuff people really need. And fresh produce, for example, is one of those. And then animals. That was a hard thing during COVID as well, is the animal shelters didn't have as many volunteers. So people are starting to ramp up their volunteerism, but people are still worried about COVID. And so you have to modulate that with safety. And then things like the senior centers, home delivered meals, where you're addressing the thoughts of isolation. And then just a mind to our youth. I heard that Gen Z, which is like the 20 to 25 year olds, that is actually the group that was most hard impacted by COVID. And if you think about all the milestones that high school seniors expected to have, first year of college expected to have, all of that, and having that huge interruption developmentally because of COVID and less resources to isolate at a time when socialness is the thing. Those groups need our support. The schools need our support. So it is across the board, but it's still unique.
Can you identify needs that are not being met and perhaps nonprofits could assist in meeting, such as homelessness? You've mentioned housing, domestic abuse, special needs, anything else?
Childcare, and especially emergency childcare. It's really tough if a family member is quarantined, their kids are quarantined too, and children in general are at risk. Other than that, I feel like we've probably covered it to some degree. Nationally, an increase in homelessness, and we certainly saw more locally in Helena. I suspect you did in Bozeman as well. And so any services that help people get into homes of any kind are helpful. And by the way, I think nonprofits can weigh in on things like zoning, where we can take down some barriers, perhaps, that would make housing a little bit more accessible.
While I think it is a little bit across the board about how nonprofits can engage in solution making on a community-wide level, I just want to add the point that they also need a seat at the table when decisions are being made about their communities throughout the county. I've been in meetings at times where I'm like, where are the nonprofits who are on the ground providing many of these services that we're talking about right now? So part of it is also when it comes to solution making for the community, ensuring that our nonprofit leaders' voices are amplified and that they're getting that voice at the table to be able to really share the lived experiences of the work that they're doing. And often those closest to the challenge are closest to the solution. And so including nonprofit voices in solution making is really imperative.
Is Bozeman unique in having considerable wealth that has grown exponentially as people have moved in during the pandemic? And does that translate into significant support for individual causes?
I guess I would say I don't feel like it's unique from the perspective that there are several communities around the country that are growing, that have significant financial assets as a community. Our community is growing really quickly. I will say just anecdotally at the Community Foundation, the majority of new funds that we are setting up on behalf of donors are from new community members who are moving here. They're giving us a call and saying, I'm really passionate about this new place I live. I don't want to make the assumption that I know what the needs are. So I'd love to set up a fund at the Community Foundation so that you can help share with us what you're learning about community needs that we can do grant making more thoughtfully. But we want to invest here. We care about this place. We're excited to be here. And so I would say that's the majority of new, in particular, donor advised funds that we're setting up are people recently relocating here. They're excited to invest and want to give back. And I think are translating, bringing some of their wealth to the area, but also being thoughtful about how it's invested in our local nonprofit. So that's just anecdotally. Earlier, we had mentioned some of the nonprofit perspective that some nonprofits are seeing their donor bases increasing, but they're also seeing that correlating challenge of the community issues they're trying to solve.
Yeah, I think in Montana, Bozeman is unique. The Flathead has some of that, but maybe more of a mix in the Flathead. But those are the two places where I would say the wealth has really grown. And I think the other issue alongside that is tourism. And I think any nonprofits, the tourism helps the economy all the way around. But I also think we can ask tourists to leave a little bit behind, or those folks who live here in the summer and somewhere else in the winter, just leave a little bit behind, a little bit of a tithe, maybe, if you think of it that way, for those organizations that are making this a place you want to visit and play.
We have a new question asking for a little bit more information about how the Montana Endowment Tax Credit works.
Almost 20 years ago, I think now, the governor put together a task force on philanthropic giving to try to address what was called the philanthropic divide and incentivize planned giving in particular. And they wanted it to be incentive enough that it could be a hefty amount that would be given, but also have enough sidewalls on it that people wouldn't go crazy with it, because it does cost the government money in some ways. So the endowment tax credit was born. It was the first of its kind nationally. And now some other states have replicated something similar. And every 6 years, we go to the legislature and we advocate for the continuation of that tax credit. So individuals and businesses can get a tax credit for planned giving. I think with businesses, it's not as strict as it is with individuals. So by planned giving, it needs to be planned, and it needs to go into an instrument where the corpus is kept in perpetuity, and it's the resources from it that get spent. It does bring in $4 to $5 million a year in giving into the state, and it benefits the charity, and it benefits the person giving because they get that credit, and it benefits government because you're using philanthropic dollars to reduce the dependency on government. So it's a win-win-win.
Thank you, Liz, for, I think, the context of the Montana Endowment Tax Credit. So just to give you some numbers, individuals who make a planned gift to a qualified Montana Endowment Fund will receive a Montana tax credit of 40% of their gift, with a maximum credit of about $10,000 or $20,000 for joint filers. And for businesses and corporations that make a direct gift to a qualified endowment, they receive a tax credit of 20% of their gift, with a maximum credit of $10,000. So you're welcome to go to our website at the Community Foundation. We have a little bit more information about the Montana Endowment Tax Credit. It is a little bit wonky and complicated, but know that the Community Foundation can help facilitate this planned giving to a qualified endowment. We host a lot of qualified endowed funds at the Community Foundation that you can support. And so we have some simplified ways of achieving that tax credit. And so feel free, reach out to us, and we're happy to help facilitate that for you.
And I would add to that, that Montana is unique in the number of community foundations. So not to encourage you not to give to Gallatin Valley, but there are other community foundations across the state. So for example, those of you who are investing in rural communities, you have a way to do that. And that's one of the wonderful things about the community foundations, is it allows you to participate in that kind of giving in any corner of the state.
That is the extent of our questions. I want to thank both our panelists for a tremendously informative and actually uplifting program.
You have just heard a Friday Forum presentation about Montana nonprofit organizations with Bridget Wilkinson, Executive Director of the One Valley Community Foundation, and Liz Moore, Executive Director of the Montana Nonprofit Association. It was moderated by Richard Lyon. Friday Forum, formerly a program of Wonderlust, is now a part of the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at MSU Bozeman, directed by Bobby Geis. This Friday Forum was recorded on December 10, 2021, via Zoom. You can find out more about the One Valley Community Foundation by going to their website, onevalley.org, and the Montana Nonprofit Association by going to mtnonprofit.org. KGVM is among the hundreds of community nonprofit organizations in Montana. Entirely volunteer-staffed, KGVM depends on our listeners for the funds needed to keep the station on the air and online, bringing you locally produced programs of interest and concern to our community. And KGVM is a force multiplier. We bring you information by, for, and about our Gallatin Valley community to keep you informed, connected, and aware of our community as we grow together and face the ongoing challenges of life. You can help keep this Gallatin Valley Community Radio Station alive and thriving to serve our community by going to KGVM's website, kgvm.org, and click on the gold KGVM button at the top of the page. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LaClaire for broadcast and archiving on Gallatin Valley Community Radio, KGVM Bozeman. We thank you for listening and for your support.